The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of Cognitive Dissonance is brought to you by our patrons. You fucking rock.
Hey, Tom, Cecil, this is Ben from Montana. So my wife thought it'd be funny to go down to the liquor store, and they had some Crown Royal Black Canadian, well, garbage, and didn't take your recommendations and thought, hey, you know, I'll give it a try. The lady at the liquor store was really anxious to sell it to me. Well, the reason she was anxious to sell it is because no one will drink this. This wouldn't even be good enough for disinfecting freaking surgical equipment on the battlefield. It's disgusting. Oh, it's a smooth whiskey. Yeah, it tasted like I was freaking swallowing sewing needles. But thought it'd be funny to drink the rest of it and glory hole. Ugh. Oh, God, that's awful. Oh, it's terrible. Oh, it doesn't stop. Oh, all right. No. Now time to go find something good.
Hey, guys. Just listening to the most recent episode. You guys did a great job. And I just wanted to put this out there because it's baffling to me. It's baffling to me that the far right is so surprised that they're... are a bunch of different types of opinions in the world. There's like endless amounts of opinions and beliefs in the world. They're so baffled by the concept that somebody wouldn't agree with them that their entire reasoning behind that is that everyone must be getting paid by George Soros. I know you guys have talked about this a lot, but it's insane to me. Like, I don't agree with you, so I must be getting paid for my opinions. That's the only other option. There isn't like, I don't know, an infinite amount of people with different experiences and beliefs in the world that exist, like, outside of your purview. Nope, must not be the case. You must be getting paid by George Soros in boiler rooms, quote-unquote, of liberals. It's insane to me. So thank you for keeping up the good work, and we appreciate it. Bye, guys.
Be advised that this show is not for children, the faint of heart, or the easily offended. The explicit tag is there for a reason.
Recording live from Glory Hole Studios in Chicago, this is Cognitive Dissonance. Every episode we blast anyone who gets in our way. We bring critical thinking, skepticism, and irreverence to any topic that makes the news, makes it big, or makes us mad. It's skeptical, it's political, and there is no welcome mat. This is episode 363. Of Cognitive Dissonance. A little bit later in this episode, we'll be joined by Thomas Westbrook from the Holy Kool-Aid YouTube channel. So stay tuned to the end of the show for that. Cecil, also stay tuned for the release of the Donald Trump Comey tapes. I'm very excited for him to never release the imaginary tapes that
That's
he doesn't
gonna be
have.
Exciting. Before we get started, speaking of Comey and President Trump, it is National Best Friends Day.
It is.
So I want to say real quick to my best friends, Tom, Heath, and Noah, happy Best Friends Day.
That's so nice of you.
Nice?
Yeah. It is nice. Yeah. You know, let me extend Cecil.
Yeah.
And Noah and Heath, if you guys are listening, happy Best Friends
Day. Happy Best Friends Day.
It's great to have so many best friends.
It is. It's nice.
You know what's great about best friends is you can have as many as you want.
Just as many. There's no limit to how many best friends.
You never have to exclude somebody.
You don't have to exclude a person
from the best friend moniker.
Add
fold
people
them
in.
It's like you know, like your heart can just keep growing.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
And if you don't get this joke, you should listen to Citation Needed, the other podcast we do with our best friends, Heath and Noah, and then
also
Eli's on that show
yeah,
as well.
Incidentally, so, yeah. Just as a side thing.
So, so listen to that show. Now you were saying Comey and Trump.
Yeah. So Comey testified in front of the Senate today.
He did.
First of all, what a poker face on that guy.
Yeah, that guy, he's a serious dude. Like you look at him, you're like, that guy is serious. He is a very serious man.
Very, very serious. And you also get the impression, I could be mistaken, but I get this distinct impression that is a principled motherfucker. Yeah, I really do.
Somebody described him as lawful neutral today. And I was like, that's true. That's true.
I like that.
Yeah. And he's one of those guys that, you know, he looks like he's an ecumenical abuser. You know what I mean? Like he would be willing to abuse Trump or abuse Hillary.
Oh yeah, whoever.
Doesn't matter
to him. Yeah. You know, he said in an interview, he said, there's a reason that Lady Justice is blind, and that's so you can't remove the blindfold and see your patron. You know, and I think he really does live by that. Like
absolutely.
You get that distinct impression.
Absolutely. And what was great, I think the one thing I got from the Trump testimony today was that he had this moment where all these Republicans are quizzing him and they keep pushing back on sort of like, well, he didn't overtly say, you know, he was actually really nice about how he approached you when he talked about his, you know, let's make sure that Flynn doesn't get, you know, investigated. He was really nice about it. It doesn't sound like he was trying to obstruct justice. It sounded like he was being really nice about it. How nice is it when a fucking mob boss walks up to me like, real shame if something were to happen to this place. You know what I mean? Like, it's so transparent. It's pathetic. And all these Republicans can't get his tiny cock out of their mouth to look at this from a perspective of, is it obstruction of justice? And I don't know if it is. That's the thing, is I don't know. But at least approach it in a manner that maybe should have the gravity of this moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the fact that he was nice about intimidating.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you have to recognize what a position of authority does to your negotiating power or your how you approach people.
Yeah.
You don't have to, if you're the fucking president of the United States, you don't have to be heavy handed, right? A heavy hand simply isn't necessary. You can just say, you know, Flynn, and what he said, I'm paraphrasing. He's like, Flynn's a real nice guy. We kind of probably should lay off that guy. He's a real nice guy. I mean, there's a message in there.
Absolutely.
And it's a clear, it's a clear fucking message.
It's one of those moments where you're just like, how fucking, you know, he's transparent in his motives because he's an oaf.
Right.
You know, and you can just tell when he's having a dinner, like there was a moment where they're asking Comey about the dinner. He's like, I really thought other people would be there. You know, I thought other people would show up. And it was weird that it was just us.
God, I can't imagine how weird it would be to sit and have dinner just with Trump.
And, you know, you read that testimony, his opening testimony, and I had a chance to read through it. I didn't read the whole thing, but I read parts of it. And some of it is just so fascinating where Trump would say, you know, there would be these moments of silence. And he notates these moments of silence between them where Trump would ask a very direct question. He would just look at him.
Yeah, well, I love the idea that you can make the director of the FBI so uncomfortable that he's like, I need to document this dinner.
Yeah, and I'm just not even going to talk at this moment. I'm not going to talk at this moment. I'm going to document the silence I had.
Right. Fucking weird, man. That's fucking weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, I Schumer, I think, I love the way he did it. He said, look, you know, Trump's come out and said, I hope no tapes ever get released. I hope no tapes ever get released. Motherfucker, you either have tapes or you don't. Release them or admit you don't have them. And Schumer basically came out and said, Trump needs to release these tapes or admit he doesn't have them. And that's it. And there are no tapes.
Well,
there'll never be a tape release.
His lawyer said something recently about like how he lied under oath. And the only way you would be able to prove that is if you had tapes.
Right.
So,
yeah. So prove it. But he won't prove it because there are no tapes.
Yeah.
And it's all just, you know, the buffoonings of an idiot. And I think what's interesting about Trump is that I'm going to speculate a little bit here, but my guess is that because he's been an authority figure for most of his life, that for most of his life, things didn't have to be true in order for everybody to behave as if they were, right? When you're the boss, everybody just eventually they back down, right? They don't want to get fired.
And bluffing can work in other arenas.
Bluffing works great in business.
Yeah.
Bluffing works great, but it doesn't work in the public sphere like this because there's too much scrutiny. He's, you know, nobody. And plus there's oversight that is disinvested.
Yeah.
And that's the big difference between business and government, right? in business, there is no oversight that's disinvested. Even if you're in an industry that's heavily regulated,
sure,
the regulators are still invested.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So, but now you have disinvested regulation. You have disinvested oversight. They don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
You can't fire them.
Put up or shut up, too. Right. Right. It's like, where's it at?
Yeah. You can't intimidate them. You can't fire them. You can't, you know, try to steal their customers from them. You can't go lobby to get a law change you didn't like.
You can't walk away.
Right.
You can't just walk away and be like, well, I don't want to do business with you anymore. Right. No, sorry. You
can't do any of that.
Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allah.
So this story is from the telegraph.co.uk, and it's with respect to the London Bridge attack. This is everything we know. So, I'm sure everybody at this point understands that there was an attack on the London Bridge. Guys drove some cars into a bunch of people.
Did a thing.
Then jumped out and went on a stabbing rampage.
Yeah.
And I put this in our notes, and I wrote next to it, I want to talk about gun control with this, right? And what I want to point out is that as terrible as this was, this would not have occurred this way in the States.
No.
Right? What they would have done is they would have jumped out of the car, and rather than running around stabbing people, which did some fucking real damage, sure, right? People got hurt. A lot of people got hurt. Some people got killed. They'd have jumped out of their cars and they'd have been shooting everybody.
Yeah.
Right? This event was over in 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Start to finish. The police fired like 50 rounds, killed these two guys. From the first 911 call to the death of the two suspects, it was an 8 minute event.
Yeah.
Imagine if these guys had been armed the way it would be very easy to become armed in the States, sure, right? You could very easily buy body armor. That's an attainable item here in the States. It's not terribly difficult to get. You can buy body armor and you can buy an assault rifle, mm-hmm, which don't send me your fucking email if that's a made up term. You know what I'm talking about.
A semi-automatic rifle with a large magazine.
Right. Yes. I'll even be specific, like a Colt, like a Colt M5 or something like that, right? They could have done infinitely more damage, so much faster. They don't have to run around getting in close quarters combat. When I read the stories here, people were fighting back. They were throwing chairs and shit at these guys. They were fighting back in a meaningful way, which probably delayed or prevented their ability to stab more people, right?
Yeah.
What? That doesn't work when people have fucking guns. It just doesn't work with ready access to guns.
One guy at an Orlando nightclub with a few guns on him, yeah, one sure gun, 49 people he killed, and he wounded 53.
104 people got injured.
49 people he killed.
Yeah.
These people killed 7, and there was 3 of them.
Yeah.
And they had a car.
Right. And how many got killed by the car? Do you know?
I don't know what the breakdown is.
I don't know what the breakdown is either. But think about how much less efficient, because you hear that bullshit argument. That's why I want to talk about it.
Yeah.
You hear that bullshit argument like, well, people are going to find a way, right? They can always get a knife. They can always make a bomb, like whatever. Yeah, you can. But nothing. And there's a reason we use guns, because nothing beats the efficiency of them.
Yeah.
If there was a more efficient weapon, we would give that to our military and police.
Sure.
Guns are incredibly efficient weapons at putting holes in things that didn't have holes in them.
Yeah.
And if you put holes in people, they die.
Yeah.
It's not terrible. This is not terribly complex. This attack, I think it's reasonable to say that this attack could have been vastly more damaging and more deadly had this occurred in an area where guns were easier to get by the general public. And it's a reason we need to think about having real gun control.
Absolutely. I am a gun owner.
I have a gun sitting 2 feet from me.
I have several guns. I carry a gun on me on occasion. I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's, I think that there's a level of gun control that's needed in this country. I am for very strict background checks.
Yeah.
I am for very strict training. I am for very strict time frames to get guns. And I own guns, and I'd be willing to give them all up and go through all the things necessary to get those guns again.
Yeah.
In order to make sure that the populace is more safe. I'd be willing also to take those guns to the scrapyard tomorrow if they said there were no more guns in the United States. I would I love to go shooting. We shoot on occasion. I love to go shoot sporting clays and trap. I and skeet. I think it's a lot of fun. I really, the shotgun sports is absolutely just hours and hours of entertainment for me. I just love it. I'm not crazy about rifles and pistols. I don't care so much about them, but I do carry a pistol on me on occasion. I would give it up tomorrow if I never had to worry about somebody having a gun on me.
Yeah.
But, you know, and this also brings up to, this sort of leads into the other story here, Tom. This was from the Raw story. This is just an ex-British ambassador says he makes me puke. And he's talking about Trump's tweets after the attack. And so I want to read these tweets. These are the four tweets that came out right after the attack. The first one is, whatever the United States can do to help out London and the UK, we will be there. We are with you. God bless. That's the first tweet he sent.
Yeah.
The second one was, at least 7 dead and 48 wounded in terror attack, and mayor of London says there is, quote, no reason to be alarmed.
Which is a not true.
Yeah.
It's just a not true.
Yeah.
Because he skips
the
second half of what the mayor said. We'll get back to that. Yeah. So what are the other two?
And then the other one is, do you notice that we are not having a gun debate now? That's because they use knives and a truck. And we can have the gun debate if we talk about guns.
Right.
Like I say, you know, you can kill 49 people and wound 53 with one single guy. You know, could you imagine if all those guys had guns? I mean, it'd be a bedlam. 150, 200 people could be dead. And then the final one is, pathetic excuse by London Mayor Sadiq Khan. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Who had to think fast on his no reason to be alarmed statement. MSM is working hard to sell it. So those are his four tweets that relate to this attack. The first one, of course, is, you know, we're with you. The other three are just you are a bag of assholes representing us. You are an awful, shitty person being petty about and using. I mean, you know, the far right accuses the left of this all the time. When these gun deaths happen in the United States, they talk about how you're using these people for political advantage. And they talk about it all the time. Look at a guy using people for political advantage, the deaths of human beings for political advantage. It's right there in front of you.
Yeah. And let's talk about what Sadiq Khan actually said. He says, my message to Londoners and visitors to our great city is to be calm and vigilant today. You will see an increased police presence today, including armed officers and uniformed officers. There is no reason to be alarmed by this.
Jesus.
We are the safest global city in the world.
Fake news.
You know, the idea that he's got to think fast. He just has to quote himself.
Yeah.
There's no reason to be alarmed by this. Well, what is this? This is the armed police and security forces. He's trying to bring calm back into the city. He's not saying there's no reason to be alarmed by the terror attack.
Yeah. He's alarmed. He's up the fucking police presence. Right. So he's clearly alarmed.
Taking and chopping off the end of that sentence. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's just absolute bullshit.
That doesn't tell you, you know, that this guy's trying to manipulate how he's trying to put doubt in people's minds about the media. He's trying to put doubt in people's minds about this president. He's trying to put doubt in people's minds about their safety. He's trying to make sure that, you know, people will support him more on these anti-immigration bills that he keeps putting forward.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, this is clear political motivation, and it's pathetic and disgusting.
Have you always wanted to win the lottery? Do you suffer from chronic poverty syndrome? Do you have real problems that are too much work to actually work on? Would you rather pretend to help than actually help? Prayer might be right for you.
So Cecil's story comes from the Huffington Post. Kentucky governor's crime plan. I love this.
Good plan.
This is bat signal ineffective, right? As if, and I say that like, because there's no Batman.
Sure. Yeah.
Volunteer prayer patrols roaming the streets. This is pretty much exactly what it sounds like. Teams of people will just walk around praying in neighborhoods that are high crime.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
That's his plan.
That's his actual plan. They'll walk around praying. In other news, fuck Louisville.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's the governor's plan to fit. Like, oh, we got a expanding crime problem in Louisville. maybe we should think thoughts about how we don't want that there anymore. You know, outside. Why would you even have to walk around?
It doesn't make any sense. Why not just sit where you're at and just project your thoughts outside?
Magic thoughts, I think, are not like, oh, fucking, I couldn't get my magic thoughts through the drywall.
Yeah, your magic thoughts are constrained to the room. I don't think so.
So it, like,
do I need to go outside? Yeah. Do I need to be in the space to pray about it?
And so I was thinking about that, and I thought, like, is this really an excuse to create, like, community policing or, like, community, like, volunteer patrols or whatever?
Sure.
But if it is, and it's a high crime area, aren't you just sending a group of, like, unarmed, happy people singing kumbaya songs?
No, don't rush to judgment. They could, if they wanted to, change the name of a few prayers to be a little more threatening.
I see.
So you could do the Flail Mary.
Oh.
Right?
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Swords Prayer.
Nice.
That's another one.
Yeah, that'll work.
Apollo's Creed. It's another one, you know? These are threatening.
Apollo's Creed.
These are threatening.
Apollo's Creed. He dies at the end, doesn't he?
But he's punchy until the end.
But so is Jesus. So I guess it works.
But he's punchy until the end, though. He's a good puncher.
Oh, my God.
So,
and I guess when I say, like, unarmed, like, they are Kentuckians. So
yeah.
Presumably they're bristling with weapons at all times.
Yeah, and probably have a stump cut off about at the elbow.
They could gnaw at the criminals with their one good tooth or whatever. They have. They don't fucking pray at it.
They have a beagle that follows them around. You better get out of here. I'm going to say the Lord's Prayer at you.
Right?
Like, whoa.
Hallowed be thy name. Hallowed be thy name.
As he's stealing your wallet.
Right?
You just see these people walking around and think, there's a mark.
Why wouldn't they just get robbed? Yeah. I would specifically rob them. I would take their Bible. You know what I'd rob? I'd take their fucking Bibles.
You are a bad person.
It would be hilarious.
I mean, I remember one time I had a pair of shoes that I wore, and it just for years, these shoes did not wear out, and I wore them years and years and years. So, you know, sometimes God is saying little epiphanies to us, little things to us, mm-hmm. but we don't know how to listen to his voice.
So this story comes from Right Wing Watch. Lance Wallaby, whatever, says that God is behind Trump's tweets and ignorance of world events. This we just have to hear.
Okay,
because
now,
this is outstanding.
Hold on a second. So I want to summarize most of this.
Okay.
Because it doesn't, like, most of it is actually him giving a speech to a congregation, and he's making some jokes, and he's being kind of funny. The summary is Trump is kind of a wild, loose cannon that sometimes says the right thing, sometimes says the wrong thing, but it doesn't matter to him.
Right.
Because he's anointed by God.
Right.
And he keeps saying over and over, well, that's what happens when you're anointed, And everybody's laughing at him, et cetera, et cetera. And he finishes up by talking about China and how China, and I don't want to play it again. I don't want to play it because it's just fine. This long droning thing. It's not really good.
Okay.
We're going to play a piece of it. Okay. I want you to hear the end of it. But, you know, he talks about China and how Obama, you know, they were playing chess with Obama, but Trump doesn't know anything. So when he asks the guy a question about North Korea and their conflict with North Korea, the Chinese ambassador says, oh, well, I'll tell you about it. And then they have an investment in it because they've got a chance to explain something to someone. And that's important.
Ignorance as a plan
is good. And God made him ignorant and God anointed him. Now I want to play. Yeah,
that's astonishing. Cause when I read this, you know, I thought, here's a guy who is one of Trump's biggest cheerleaders.
Yeah.
Saying, like, hey, man, his weird, erratic behavior. And I'm not even paraphrasing. He says erratic behavior. When you have to look at the guy that you're saying is the leader of the world and be like, yeah, his behavior is difficult to understand and erratic. And he doesn't know what he's talking about most of the time. Why are you defending that guy as the leader?
It's because he's anointed by God.
You wouldn't allow that guy to be the fucking shift manager at Arby's. You wouldn't.
You have all the Arby's sauce on him. His fucking belly's hanging up over the... What do you want in your burger? Oh, that's fucking amazing. All right, let me play this last bit for you here, Tom, because I think this is very enjoyable at the end. All I think you'll really like it.
This is a totally different game, people. God's changed the game. I feel the anointing right now. I'm off the bottle.
Okay, so now it ends here, but I actually went to YouTube to find it continues on.
Oh.
So here's the rest of it.
All right. That's amazing. Oh, I like this. This is good. Yeah. That's right.
Repeat after me.
Scooby-Dooby melody.
I'm kidding. That's not it. I that was rude. This is actually it. This is it here.
I gotta learn that! I gotta learn this! Oh my god! Look at him! That could go for the rest of. Oh my god! Wow. The video for that is the greatest thing it's ever.
Lance Cancel Cowan is YouTube. Pretty awesome, I think.
He kind of looks a little
like. He does kind of look
like. He does look like that trash man or whatever.
Oh, talking in tongues is seriously my favorite thing.
Have you seen someone do it in person?
I just saw it now and I could not, I would not be able to sit in that room if they were going shimmy.
I told you somebody talked in tongues at me, right?
I would be in stitches on the ground. That's not something I know that would be rude. I recognize the rudeness of that, yeah. But I just would not be able to be in front of someone. And
at this point in my life, no way either. When I was 17 and it happened, I know I've told you this story before, but like I went to one of those mega churches because there was a girl I was interested in. I went to this mega church and they pulled me to the side and they put me like in a little wacko room. And this woman fucking habba-doo-doo-blah-ed at me.
Oh, habba-doo-doo-blah.
She like touched me. She like touched my shoulder and put her head down. She's like, hum-ba-da-shabba-da-riggity-biggity-bop-bop-bop or whatever the fuck she said. I don't know. And I remember being petrified. Like, is she not going to let me go until I babble too? Like, what do I have to do to get out of this? You know? And it was super weird. And when they did let me go, they were like, "When do you need your name and phone number, Mike?" And I was like, "I'm going to give you the wrong name and phone number.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way I'm giving you a working phone number."
Those people, that's like lying to the cops. Like you're just like, "I just stole a big thing.
Right? I'm holding this for a friend.
I'm Joerson.
My name is Billy No Crimes.
Billy No Crimes." And the point that the psalmist is making is when a nation sacrifices innocent children in abortion or infanticide, that is a sacrifice to demons. It's like food for demons, using that expression metaphorically. What I mean by that is that act of the shedding of innocent blood, the most innocent among us, it empowers satanic forces.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is Jim Baker. The Ringling Brothers circus closing was a sign from God about the last days. This guy is a spin machine. This guy is fucking on the spin cycle all the time. How he's not dizzy, how he can remain vertical is a motherfucking mystery.
Unless we repent, unless we talk to God, unless we turn to God, and if we destroy our president... Do you believe it was a miracle, right? You said that.
I do believe it was a miracle.
All right. If you come against what God does, or you're saying, when you're saying Trump is no good, we got to get rid of him, you're attributing to Satan what God did.
Again, we go back to the election night when we had that conversation.
I know.
The only way God interferes, if you're a believer, is he either changed people's minds, removing free will, or he changed the ballots, removing our choice.
Literally rigged the results of the election, which means that less people voted for Trump and their voices were not heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So either way, he fucked with our free will.
Yeah. I don't understand how the leaps of logic they get through just to believe this. But but it's one of those things that you hear them say all the time. And it's that threatening, like, you know, don't you dare go against this. This is your guy.
I guess the other possible, but it's still fucking with free will, but the other possible way that God could have influenced the election is to have had people who would have voted Hillary stayed home.
Yeah, again, still, it's the same
still
thing.
Free will.
It's the same thing. It's all free concept. Will.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's very dangerous.
Well, the same day President Trump arrived in the Mideast, something happened. Something happened after 146 years. Would that be epic?
Yes.
Sure. 146 yes. years?
Well, depends on what it is.
Yeah.
It depends on what it is. What happened? You don't just agree that anything that happened that took a long time to happen was epic. What if an old tree fell down? Oh, fucking epic.
Dude, it was super epic because it was big.
Well, what if it didn't make a sound?
Mm, I wasn't there, so I don't know.
Yes.
Something happened and God spoke to me.
Mm-hmm.
He said,
he spoke to you after 140 years? Jesus
fucking took a. He's like an ant. It takes a very long time.
You know what happened was? He told Pat Robertson 140 years ago, and he just told him.
He just got it.
It's a game of phone tag or whatever.
Right.
Telephone or operator. Or
one of those.
Kill a hooker or something. I forget what it's called.
Kill a hooker.
This is no accident. The same day he arrives in the Mideast, the Ringling Brothers Circus packs up its tent after 146 years. It performed.
What? Wait, what?
The circus closed? Maybe there's no market for circuses.
Who wants to go into a big, hot, smells like shit room and watch dirty animals run around? I never wanted to go to the circus.
Well, here's the answer. Not enough people to keep them in business.
Yeah.
Right? That's the answer. This is a bit of the fucking circus is a business. That's what it is. If the business closed, it's because the market doesn't want anymore. These guys can't get the fucking free market deep enough into the back of their fucking throat, right? Yeah. Their fucking uvula is fucking bruised with how hard they get face fucked by the fucking free market all the time. Like, oh!
Absolutely.
Mascara's fucking.
Yeah. And there's a pile of puke on in front of
from how hard they're fucking gagging on the fucking free market, right?
They have to tell the cameraman to hold on a second. They're like, wait a minute. While their eyes are just pouring, they vomit two or three times. It comes out their nose. They need to get a fluffer over there to wipe their face off.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever it takes.
We'll edit
to
that
get
out.
More free market into them.
It's last performance. The elephant is mainly to blame. Now, that's not the prophecy, but that's a piece of the prophecy.
Here's the thing, Jim. I just want you to know that when you tell the folks that are eating your buckets of slop, I want you to let them know that the elephant is partly to blame for this. He had tried to do a hostile takeover.
You know, it's so unfair to blame the elephant. You know, an elephant goes rampaging through the crowd once or twice.
One time.
You know, and it's like, all of a sudden, the elephant's a big problem.
We're not talking about fucking elephant control methods.
We
never hear about that. We never hear about, like, safety and regulation behind elephants when they go crazy.
The only way to prevent, to protect myself from elephant attacks is with a bigger elephant.
Absolutely.
What if only bad guys had elephants?
Yeah, what if they only had bull elephants?
Right?
Then what? Where are you now? And here I am walking around with my rhino, and I'm fucked.
You know, that's why I am going to actually clone a mastodon and raise it from birth.
The elephant is no longer in the show by law. In America, you cannot have elephants in circuses anymore.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah, well.
Like, who seriously is like, what the fuck? You're ruining America. Like, I never even once in my life thought, I need to see an elephant show.
But
it's never occurred to me to see an elephant show.
But, like, he's going to get all fucking outraged about this. But there's a reason. It's because the elephants are poorly kept and poorly managed and abused. And people protested that.
They're a big animal. animal.
Yeah, but the reason is because people were like, yeah, maybe elephants aren't the kind of animal that you should fucking train to do this work because they're fucking big and smart, and to train them, you have to hurt them real bad. And, you know, they really shouldn't fucking live in a box car on a train. That's not like good for them. Yeah. So yeah, they banned him because it's fucking cruel.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know anything about
why they banned him. When this was a big controversy.
Here's why I don't know anything about it. Cause I don't care. Like I genuinely don't care. Like I'm like, if somebody were to come to me tomorrow and say, Cecil, do you realize that they banned elephant shows? And be like, there was elephant shows. Like, huh? It sounds stupid. Right. Why would you ever even consider it? So to me, I'm like, I don't even care. Like, I don't care why. Right. They banned it if they did. And to be honest, to be real honest, I wouldn't care if they lit the item on fire.
I wouldn't care.
But I don't care that they banned it either. Like, yeah. I'm completely neutral on
this.
But
I remember when this was a big controversy. Yeah, sure. I remember when it was a big controversy.
You know, I'm sure we'll get email because I remember when we talked about animals being sad or looking sad at SeaWorld, a bunch of people were like, Blackfish, you guys watch Blackfish and you got all super sad about it. I'd be like, no, I just don't like going to zoos, or I don't like going to the aquarium and seeing like the big lonely ass one whale and that big thing. I anthropomorphize it. I look at it and I think, well, that would suck.
Yeah,
it'd be super boring. And so I have no idea whether or not the whale's suffering. And here's the other key. I don't care. Like, I genuinely don't care if the whale's suffering. Like, it doesn't matter to me. I'm like, and that's the same reason I wouldn't go to a fucking whale show. It's the same reason I wouldn't go to an elephant show, because I don't fucking care.
Because they protect. Isn't it something? We kill 50 million babies or
almost 6
elephant babies. And just all these ears on the ground and small little tusks. You have to make like tiny little pipes out of them. You can't even do anything fun with it. You can't even make a piano out of that.
Make a baby piano.
Make a little piano. Like a Linus piano.
Right? That'd be awesome.
60.
Almost 60 million babies in America, but yet you can't kill a fucking elephant. What the fuck?
Here are two things that are unrelated.
Get an elephant in here. I want you to feed it buckets until it dies.
These two things have no relationship to one another. Until we fix the abortion problem, we can do whatever we want.
You can kill elephants.
We can stab puppies in the eyes. Doesn't matter because there's abortion.
As long as we have abortion.
As long as there's abortion, every other wrong is just...
Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Have an elephant perform because it's not humane.
Right.
Come on, people. You better wake up and listen. The elephant is no longer in the show, and it was the death note.
God, can you imagine how that elephant smells? What a dirty, shitty animal.
They power wash it, man. It's fine.
They probably do.
They probably fucking power wash and scrub brush
still
those
nasty,
fucking things.
Nasty, weird, wrinkly, fucking ugly animal.
Such a shitty person.
Why? Because I hate elephants? I genuinely hate most creatures.
Though. I know you do. That's why I'm saying you're a shitty person.
I don't like most creatures. There's like three or four okay creatures, and the rest of them, I'm like, that's a garbage
cats,
animal.
Cats, dogs.
Cats and dogs are fine.
Boa constrictors.
I'm not a snake person either. I kill all those snakes. I don't give a fuck about snakes.
I don't either.
I don't give a shit about rodents. Like, kill all the rodents. Who cares about them? Yeah, murder every rodent. Like, put it all in a big pot and light it on fire. I don't care. I fuck rodents. And then I just start. I'm like, birds. Fuck them. I don't care about any birds.
Man. Birds are fucking awful.
There's a few mammals that I like. Like, but they're like domesticated. The rest of them, I'm like,
well, I can't think of anything else that's domesticated that I have any interest in to like.
I like foxes. I think they're cool looking, right?
Yeah, right. I would. You know what? Foxes are kind of neat.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too, because you can write a whole song about what they'll say, which is good.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. I'm the scat man.
They found out that the elephant was the biggest draw the circus had. Isn't that something?
That's something.
That really is.
Now, what is this?
Here's what we did. We went to the circus when we were in Las Vegas.
Cirque du Soleil.
We went to Cirque du Soleil. You want to know what? They didn't have any fucking animals. They just had a bunch of people doing all kinds of gymnast crazy shit. And it was fun.
It was amazing.
And fun to watch.
Yeah.
So you could still do the circus. They do a circus here in Chicago that Sarah wanted to see. We couldn't because we were out of town. But it's called Cavalia. And it's horses. And it's a big horse thing where they do flips and whatever on the horses. And it's like a circus thing with horses. Again, It's a circus. You could totally do it.
Right.
Just because Barnum and Bailey didn't change their business model in 140 years, I shouldn't have to cry crocodile tears because somehow there's abortion. Right? I mean, like, isn't that his argument?
Symbol of the elephant.
Oh, yes. It's amazing, honey.
Say it. The Republican Party. You don't know that?
Of course we do. But
you ought to help me. So, are you guys high church? What are you?
Of course we do, but when you say it out loud, then we know it more.
I hate that woman.
Are you serious? That's
Yeah. Because this is it's the death of the Republican Party. This is the
They're only in power.
Right.
They only like own it all.
But it's terrifying to them because they're doing a bad job of it.
And they're
elephants
they own it so fucking hard right now that even if there was an impeachment, nothing would happen. Like even if it went to the thing, nobody would impeach him. Nothing would happen.
Okay, hold on a minute. Let me break it down for you a little different. There's a circus. It's been in town. It's been around for 146 years. It had elephants. The elephants are the Republicans. Nobody likes the elephants anymore. The elephants are also the most liked thing because of the biggest draw. The most popular thing is no longer liked by people. Therefore, abortion is wrong and the Republican Party is the apocalypse.
I think you've nailed it.
It's another...
Any holy rollers here? Anybody from a Pentecostal? I need some Pentecostal or some shouting Baptist. Anybody a shouting Baptist? You're a shouting Baptist. A shouting Baptist.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, now listen to me. Listen to me.
I just need somebody to jibber jabber.
You want me to tell you what God spoke to me about this?
Yes.
I love them elephants. And if they go away, I'm never going to be able to see those curly tails anymore. And I love that stuff, the way they curl up. And then if you pull them, they go blink and they go right back to where they were.
And you know what also happened in this 24-hour period, 48-hour period? This news from Manchester in England.
How are you going to connect the Manchester Arena explosion
to suicide elephant?
Fuck, dude, that would be messy as shit.
That would be,
That would be messy as shit.
Everybody on the other side of the elephant would be fine.
Can you imagine the size of the fucking suicide vest you have to strap on that elephant?
You got to get it at the Big and Tall store.
Right?
22, mostly children.
Yes.
Were murdered.
By elephants.
By a terrorist.
A terrorist elephant.
You're not going to like this, Pastor.
Okay. It was a donkey.
I'm sorry, but I'm not a happy prophet. I'm a prophet of doom, as they say. You know, Jim Baker is a prophet of doom. No, I'm a prophet of the king is coming back.
Yeah.
And all the stuff that has to happen. Jesus.
I'll make sure to tell you about it so you buy my buckets.
Right.
So you can be well fed when the king comes back.
Great news. God loves you so much that his only dead son who's not dead is coming back to be more alive later. He's going to come back to love you so much. But first, there has to be some random apocalyptic events
that make your life terrible.
Right.
Until that point.
Because
it's going to suck.
Can you imagine like how that would work if you just try to tell that to like anybody else? It's like, oh, great news. We're going to go on vacation next week. Oh, yeah. But between now and then, I'm going to put out a pack of cigarettes in your eyes. Like, why? What fucking what? But it's going to be an amazing vacation.
We're going to Disney, but I won't be able to see Dumbo.
This is coming back.
That's right.
I've
spent a lot of time in the Revelation. Revelation is now, people.
Yes, it is.
But here's what God spoke to me. The circus is over.
Amen. Oh, yes.
Wow. And this is so good, isn't it?
And what is happening?
What is going
what
on?
What is happening?
On screen, there's just superimposed letters that says, the circus is over.
And the woman is overreacting in a huge way.
She's got her fake orgasm. She's got her fucking When Harry Met Sally fake orgasm thing going on. Oh, this is so great!
I'll have what she's saying.
Life,
this is amazing.
Life as we know it, unless we turn back to God, it's not going to be fun anymore.
It's a metaphor, Tom.
Oh, I should have thought of that. I wonder if it's going to be bread and circuses or just this circus.
Circuses.
Here we go.
They went to a concert. 21,000 people went to a concert for fun, happiness, joy.
Yeah.
And a bomb went off.
Oh.
Mount Everest. Hillary's step has collapsed. Mountaineer confirms. Mount Everest.
So what?
Hold on. He's going to tie it all into the elephants are doing this. You just got
to
give
him a minute. Swear to God, I want to fist fight this man.
Chris, the rocky outcrop near the peak of Mount Everest has collapsed. Hillary's step, it's called. Has collapsed.
Hillary.
You can do with that whatever you want. There's warfare.
Yes.
As it fell, it just said, butter emails! Oh, this goes on a little longer, too.
Does it ever make sense?
Nope.
I love this. This is so great. I love this. It's my favorite thing. Scooby Dooby Dooby. I can't.
I know. Nobody can sing with you. So we're joined now by Thomas Westbrook of the Holy Kool-Aid YouTube channel. He's actually at the glory hole. He didn't break down any doors. He didn't scream, oh, yeah, when he came in the room.
He hasn't left, though. That's when you leave.
Oh, is it?
I was concerned.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't realize.
Yeah.
It's this is the lowest moment of my life.
You have no idea how much worse this is going to get.
My mom would be proud. You know, she's already disappointed that I'm an atheist, but, you know, now I'm on a podcast with a bunch of guys who make dick jokes.
Yeah.
Well, just, you know what? She's a patron. So, yeah. I mean, she's got no room to talk.
What perks does she get?
All of them. Yeah,
well, there's a special glory hole patronage.
We had to create a special level for her. It was real. And it's about 2.5 feet off the ground.
Welcome to the glory hole. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So we met at ReasonCon. We met before that via email and chatted and stuff, but we met at ReasonCon. And you have a pretty interesting background. Tell us a little bit about your background first. You said that you grew up a mission kid. Tell us about that.
I did grow up a mission kid. It was a very interesting experience.
Was it impossible? Just one. It's a legitimate mission
question. Everywhere he walks, like, dun, 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 dun,
how do you not
dun,
do that? How do you not?
Ba-da-da!
This man knows how Ba-da-da! To enter and leave a room. I would only enter rooms suspended from a series of cables. Just. Now he leaves as the Kool-Aid man. It just.
Every heist, he leaves as the Kool-Aid.
Stealthy on the way in, blow shit up on the way out.
I should hop up on the chair so I'm not triggering the alarms on the
So transition back to a legitimate question.
Yeah, a legitimate question and a legitimate answer. Right. So
a mission kid, what even is a mission kid?
Well, so my parents were missionaries in Asia, in a Muslim country. And I grew up I was homeschooled, which that's weird as it is. You know, I'm still trying to overcome my social awkwardness. But college,
doing a great job, by the way.
Well, college did.
He's not doing a very good job. Don't tell him.
Well, I edit the shit out of my videos so that people can't see it.
Yeah. Cecil edits me. It's perfectly fine. No,
In fact, just now, you know, there's this long, awkward pause that they're going to edit out. But or just don't edit it out. Just let it like sink in so people can just feel the awkwardness.
Feel the awkwardness.
They'll look down and like, is it buffering? No, no. It's still going. That's just,
so a mission. So from birth, you were a mission or like just like from, at what age were you a mission kid?
So technically I'm always a mission kid now that I'm, you know, but I was.
I didn't know there were technicalities.
Oh, yeah. I guess I'm not a kid anymore. But my
is it like
my
the
childhood
Marines
was,
where you're never like formerly a Marine? You're just like, I'm always a Marine.
Semper Fi, bitches. No, so I was 3 years old when I went overseas.
When they went missioning.
Yep.
Gotcha.
And, but, you know, my parents, they were, you know, very educated. My dad had a master's degree. My mom was college educated. And so I didn't get the stereotypical homeschool experience where, you know, it's, oh, we're just going to wait inside in our pajamas and wait for the rapture. You know, I got to see a lot of amazing things. You know, I was in the Soviet or former Soviet Union right after the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Oh, wow.
And I saw I saw a country as it's, you know, emerging out of poverty. You know, there were bread lines that you would have to go and stand in line at in the morning to get bread. The water would go out and you'd have a little bucket that you'd have to, you know, take down to the watering hole and then carry it up 10 flights of stairs.
I admire it. I don't care about other people's souls bad enough to wait in one line for anything. Like the fact that your parents would be like over there, you know, they care enough about this to be like, yeah, they're going to endure the same hardship as the locals, right?
Yeah. And in that regard, I think, you know, I hear a lot of people sometimes they'll bash Christians for particular reasons. And I get I made a whole video on why are atheists so angry. And it comes down to where if we're angry, it's because we give a damn. We see a lot of the harm that's being caused mm-hmm. by, you know, the Catholic Church covering up the raping of pedophile or the raping of children.
Raping of pedophiles would be a different story, though. Yeah, like, right.
Well, the raping of children by pedophile priests is being covered up. Right. You have, you know, the Pope saying that you shouldn't be using condoms in AIDS-ridden parts of Africa. You guys have, you know, seen a lot of the crazy. And that's enough to get anyone's blood boiling. But my experience as a missionary kid in the heat of all of this was a very positive experience. Most of the people that I encountered mm-hmm. were good, loving, caring, kind Christian people, but it that wasn't why I left my faith. You know, I left because I fell in love with science. I started doing all this research. Particularly, I've noticed a lot of atheists or a lot of neuroscientists, a lot of cosmologists and evolutionary biologists tend to be atheist. And those were three fields that I just absolutely fell in love with. And the more that I dove into them, I thought, you know, that the science would prove my religion correct. But instead, the other, you know, it was the other way around. And the more things...
The religion proved your science correct? I'm very confused.
No, that's Ray Comfort. Ray Comfort says that. That's
as I left my faith, I started to see, you know, I started learning all of these crazy, cool, awesome things that just completely conflicted with my faith. And that made me want to share it. It made me want to, you know, tell other people that, you know, hey, here's some amazing thing that I've learned about the brain. For example, I used to have sleep paralysis, and I just made a video on this, but it's when you're sleeping and suddenly you're jolted out of sleep and, you know, but you're jolted out of REM sleep. And normally, you know, while you're sleeping, your brain releases GABA and glycine and it paralyzes your muscles so that you don't thrash and roll over and fall out of bed. But if you're suddenly awakened during REM sleep, then you can, you know, your muscles can still be paralyzed for a little while while you're awake, while you're lucid.
Yeah.
And just take Cialis though for that, right? Is that what you do? I don't know.
Yeah. If your paralysis lasts over 4 hours,
you might be dead.
You're probably dead. That's what I tell my wife anyway. sleep paralysis for the waste. I don't
know. It's sleep paralysis, not like seven whiskeys.
No, if you can just get it to be paralyzed in an erect position.
No kidding, right?
Now,
there's some real science to be done here.
I just use a popsicle stick. That's standard, right?
Damn, we're sitting on a gold bar.
Now, I've had sleep paralysis once or twice in my life, and it's a really shocking thing to happen to you.
I've had it over a dozen times.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I have really shitty
sleep
habits.
Are you sure it wasn't a ghost sitting on your chest? It could be a
ghost
sitting
on your
chest.
It felt like it, dude. It felt like it seriously feels like there's something holding you down.
Well, the first time I thought it was demons.
Yeah.
Because it first happened to me while I was a creationist.
Oh, God.
And so I woke up and I remember like looking up and seeing like this cross on the wall and my eyes are just fixated on it. And I'm like inside my head, you know, I can't really say anything or scream for help, but inside my head I'm thinking, you know, Jesus, save me, help me, help me.
Sure.
And like nothing's happening and nothing like it, and it eventually goes away on its own.
He doesn't even lift, right, bro. He's just, come on. He's not gonna get the demon off your chest.
I didn't get enough likes on Facebook.
Like me enough and this demon will get off my chest. Yeah. It's a really terrifying experience though. And I will attest to that. It is one of those things that happens to you even when you're not a believer. That is really weird. Mm. It feels weird. It feels, because you're still kind of quasi dreaming and you're stuck in this position. And I've had some serious, like, I've also like snapped out of it where like when I finally can move, like my limbs flail. It's really awesome. Like, it's a really crazy thing that happens, but I could see where people see it as I watched a ghost show one time where this woman was like, yeah, I wrote about sleep paralysis and I knew it wasn't that. It was a ghost. I'm just like,
what the fuck?
Okay.
No.
Yeah. But seriously, it's such a powerful experience that it can wash even reason out of your head. You
sure.
know what I mean?
Sure. So, and I can imagine as a creationist, like, so okay, I do want to back you up a little bit because I'm curious. So it's mission work, but specifically what religion, like what denomination of Christianity?
So they were Protestant, probably, well, they were non-denominational, but they were probably closest to Pentecostal. So they believed in the whole speaking in tongues, demon possession.
Did they hold on to snakes at all, or no snakes over there?
No snakes, but because, you know, they thought, you know, you shouldn't test God.
Okay, I see.
But at the same time, you know, I was taught young earth creationism and that the earth was 6,000 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, and I could be wrong about this, so correct me if I am, but like, if you're taught that particular bill of goods, like, because there's a lot of Christians that don't believe in the young earth theory, right? Like, I think more are not young earth creationists than are. I think if you're in that, even the most cursory traveling down real scientific roads will blow that up in a way that might be more unsettling and foundation shattering than if you happen to be, let's say, Catholic, right? The Catholics believe in evolution. They don't believe in a 6,000-year-old earth.
Right.
So,
well, let's just say it takes a tremendous amount of cognitive dissonance.
but like when that happens, I have to imagine that's like,
yeah,
because it's such an untenable position mm-hmm. for everything to rest on.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, sure, everything rests on a top.
Yeah.
You know, it's very unstable. It's the littlest motion to left or right is going to knock that fucker over. Yeah. The wider that base is, the more stable it's going to be, I guess.
Well, if you're familiar with the backfire effect.
No idea what that is.
In psychology, a lot of times if you get in an argument with someone and you present them with facts and reason, then, you know, they've done studies on this where, you know, they'll present someone with facts that go against an emotionally held belief.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't
know
this.
And they interview them both before and after. And it turns out after they're presented with that evidence in an argumentative fashion, they wind up being more solidified in their belief system.
What about if you mansplain it, though? Does that change the effect?
Yeah, sure.
As long as you're manspreading while you do it.
Yeah. Women get moist. That's what... He's like leaning. Let me mansplain.
Oh, hang on a minute. I wasn't condescending enough in my explanation. I'll scale that back. But yeah, women condescending just, is when I talk
women,
down to you.
Women are just screaming sploosh. Yeah, good stuff.
That's actually my go-to pickup line. It works every time.
Now, so you started. You must have shaken off religion at sort of a later age then, right? So you were in college at the time, or
the very end of college.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
I actually went through a bit of a transitionary phase where it was incredibly gradual. So I had a high school youth pastor who told me, you know, sat down with me and he's like, you know what? When you learn that there's, you know, more evidence in favor of evolution to show that it's a valid theory that you should believe, you know, don't abandon your faith altogether. You know, these ideas can be compatible. And so I wasn't quite
an overlapping magisteria, man.
Well, I wasn't afraid of it.
How is it not incompatible with a 6,000 year old earth? I mean, like, there's just no time for the evolution to happen.
Didn't we see the fucking short neck giraffes and Ken Ham's fucking deal? Ken Ham's ark has short neck giraffes.
Will you excuse me while I kill myself for a moment?
Raptors.
You're right. And it had shellless turtles. Tortoise monsters.
That look like little poop monsters.
Ken Ham doesn't believe in evolution.
He believes in macroevolution, not microevolution. He does believe in evolution in some ways, because you have to believe in evolution if you have a short neck giraffe on there. Even though the short neck giraffe is a uh-huh. bullshit thing, that's not a real thing, right? But he's too stupid to realize that that's not a real thing. And it's also, you're also believing somewhat in revolution. Yeah. But he believes in a fast time scale, though.
Right. And only like change over a fast period of time, but only within species, if I'm not mistaken, right? Like,
which
he thinks a dog can turn into a wolf.
If you've ever studied ring species, and you see, you know, right now there, you know, there are birds and salamanders that, you know, that we have that are all alive right now, that in varying regions that neighbor each other or border each other, they can reproduce with the species right next to it, or the salamander right next to it. But then as it goes around in a loop, you know, either around a mountain or around the Arctic Circle, then they cannot reproduce with the one on the other end. So once they get all the way around this barrier, then they're a different species. And, you know, so we have just blaring evidence of speciation, of one animal evolving into another.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it was little things like that that, you know, I started to stumble across. And then when I realized, oh, hey, like, this whole evolution thing, you know, it makes a lot more sense than young Earth creationism. I shifted to an old Earth idea where, you know, oh, well, the story of Genesis isn't literal.
Yeah, sure.
But as soon as I did that, all the dominoes started falling, because if the story of Genesis isn't literal, then there was no first man. If there's no first man, there's no original sin. If there's no original sin, what is Christ dying for, an allegory?
So that's a shitty reason to die, right?
Yeah.
No one dies for young Goodman Brown. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's a fine story, I guess, but like, I'm not going to die for the fucking thing. Are you fucking kidding me? You want to fucking die for the crucible? Fuck you.
No, but he didn't
die.
He
for
didn't
waiting
die.
For Godot. Right?
I mean, when I think of death, I think it's, you know, this permanent thing, right? Jesus, you know, he just got set aside for a couple days. You know, it's like at the worst, it made him late. So he was inconvenienced.
Made him late. Yeah, I know, right? Like, he was temporarily inconvenienced. And who's to say it even hurt? Like, God can't use some magic fucking Novocaine.
Admittedly, so.
Ouch.
I mean, we're being a little harsh here, but a temporary inconvenience, isn't that cancer? Is a temporary inconvenience too, right? I mean, like, cancer or like brain cancer, tumors, those are temporary inconveniences until they kill you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But if you know that you're coming, that you're going to be just fine and you're going to go on vacation for the rest of your life later, that's the difference, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, it's like you get cancer.
What about the Make-A-Wish Foundation?
Worth it. Worth it. You haven't heard my wish.
They just open up this giant envelope of your wish, and it's all commas. And you're just like, they're like, no.
Yeah,
no,
they look at my wish like, close the foundation.
Yeah. We are not serving you 1,000 peacocks. It's not happening. Just not happening.
You can't have ortolans for every meal. This is fucking.
And the thing is it's none of it's sexual. It's all food.
Right.
It's like all food. It's all.
That does not mean it's not sexual.
You make everything extinct.
I want to eat the last of the following animals.
Oh, man.
Oh,
cancer's going to be balling. you shake off religion. And how soon after do you start a YouTube channel?
So it was
what's the requirement on that?
I'm just curious because you know, you clearly have a story to tell, and you clearly have a point of view, and you clearly are well educated. So you obviously wanted to talk to other people about this, because I know, as a believer, not becoming a believer was a very life changing experience for me.
Well, a huge part of it was not an instantaneous thing.
Sure.
I went through, you know, I spent a couple years where I was very hesitant to start anything, because I didn't want to misinform. And so I read
what the fuck
so
is that
much.
About?
It's an honorable impulse that I simply don't share.
I don't understand it.
Right?
Go ahead.
I started reading about a book a week, and in, you know, a wide area of science based topics.
Have you made a reading rainbow yet? Or
hey, take a look. All right,
it is in the book.
Yeah. You know, I tried to soak up as much information as I could before I really started talking about it. And initially, it wasn't meant to be this massive thing. It was just going to be a few videos that I could share with my family and with my parents, telling them why I don't think that this is logical, why I don't believe anymore. Because if I have these conversations in person, I tend to just get interrupted and cut off.
Sure.
And I wanted to be able to share something from my heart. And the audience started growing. And then I started seeing a lot of the harm that religion did.
Sure.
Or does. And I was frustrated. And so I made a few videos that were a little bit more, you know, mocking, satirical. I'm a polemicist. What can I say? But I'd made a series called Animated Bible Myths. And in it, the main character, God, is Dinkleberry.
Nice.
Which, that apparently was the most offensive thing to my family.
Yeah,
they stumbled across my YouTube channel and they took huge offense at that.
I want to rewind you a little bit. So you said that you created this partially with the intent to share with your family in a way that they, you know, you don't get into a sort of back and forth that they can interrupt. How was your channel received by your family? Your folks know
initially,
about this?
Initially, yeah. Before the mocking.
Initially, I wanted to have a bunch of videos before I shared it with them. But I got three videos in and I had a lot of frustration over, you know, how I'd been misled. I wasn't mad at my parents because I don't think that they deliberately lied
to
me.
Sure, sure.
But I was mad at religion in general. And, you know, I felt free at first, but then I was kind of frustrated. And then I was just, you know, I kind of wanted to show why all of this is bullshit. And I did it in kind of a tongue-in-cheek way. And then I mellowed out a little bit. Now I just love life.
Yeah,
I don't, okay. I'm not angry or mad or upset because I don't want to live under that cloud. I want to have, you know, a positive side of, you know, looking on just the fact that this life is short. Yeah. Makes it so much more meaningful, makes it, you know, gives me so much more purpose to make the most of it. And I want to share that joy and that love of humanity with other people.
Yeah.
So I think my channel has become a lot more optimistic, but when my parents stumbled across it, it was right as I was making those animated mm-hmm. Bible myths, and they did not take it well. My mom and dad think I'm going to hell. My uncle said I'm just as crazy or I'm just as bad as religious extremists. Which, I mean, they religious extremists kill cartoons, and I'm making cartoons. So if you can't see the emotional disconnect there, if you can't see the moral disconnect there, something is wrong with your objective sense of morality.
Do you think he really believes that, or is that, do you think that's hyperbole to sort of compare you with the worst, right? Like, because I guess because I've heard that concept before, like, you know, it's just as bad as religious extremists, like atheist extremists, right?
Yeah, you hear that all the
time. It's just as bad, right? And it's like, well, I mean, like, the worst end of religious extremism is, you know, bombings in Manchester and it's burning people alive.
Driving a car on London Bridge and killing a bunch of people.
Throwing gays
and
like, off buildings.
Yep,
right.
There you go.
And you're making YouTube videos. Yeah. And I just fail to see how anybody with even the most basic common decency can actually make that comparison, honestly. Are they just making it in the sense that like an extreme point of view? Because the extreme point of view of atheism, like, what is it? I mean, do you think that comes from an honest place?
Here's the problem with religion is that people take it on as part of their identity and they adopt it emotionally. So if you go after their religion, if you go after their God, they feel like you're personally attacking them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not able to swap it in and out like an idea. You know, if I tell you right now, you know, that... You know, if you think that, and I use this example in one of my videos, but if you think that lightning never strikes the same place twice, and I show you, actually, it's, you know, the Empire State Building gets struck 100 times a year. That idea, you can easily just dismiss and, you know, be like, oh, okay, you know, I agree with you, and you move on. Mm. You're not emotionally attached to it. It's not a part of who you are.
It's not your identity. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Religion, people say, you know, they don't say, oh, I believe in Allah. They say, I am a Muslim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so if you come along and you know, you say, oh, that's wrong, they feel like you're rejecting them. They feel personally attacked.
Hmm.
And so I think with my parents, you know, they see it as we raised him better than this. You know, here he is rejecting us. How could he do this to us?
Yeah.
Rather than just I reached the end of a rational journey.
So if people were going to find your show, where would they look?
So the main thing right now is my YouTube channel, which is called Holy Kool-Aid. And then I have a website called holykoolaid.com that aggregates everything. I'm trying to come up with different resources there to plug people into the atheist community, you know, finding local groups near them, finding conferences. I want to have a wide variety of resources. I also have, you know, Facebook and Twitter is Holy Kool-Aid, and I have just about every other social media platform.
Hmm. We'll put it on this episode show notes. This is episode 363. Thanks for joining us in studio,
thanks,
Thomas.
Man. Appreciate it.
I had a blast. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Glory hole, motherfuckers.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
It's from Newsweek. Bald people should watch out for witch doctors. Mozambique police warn after murders.
Whoa. It's people with hairlessness, Tom. What the fuck is wrong with you?
People who are follicularly challenged.
Follicularly challenged folks. Yeah. This is just unbelievable. The level of rudeness.
I'm sorry, man.
Unbelievable. There's there's like two people with follicleness, follicle-lessness in the audience that are so mad.
There's
going to
be somebody
right
with alopecia just like, God damn it. God damn it. All right. It's not fucking funny. All right.
I always wanted to get one of those alopecias. Those things are so cool. They're huggable. They have big, long necks, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you can shear them and make a sweater.
Yeah, you make a sweater.
Actually, an alopecia is exactly the opposite.
I love
of that.
Those like, alopecias. They're awesome.
I think a real alopecia would be funny. Just lube up and like squirt like a bar of soap. Yeah.
You
know?
What you need is a slip inside and some Crisco. You know what I mean? Like you just be like, all right, here we go. This is good stuff.
This is how the magic happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just saying. So turns out Mozambique, not exactly a hotbed of scientific literacy. This story is nuts. So a couple of bald people were killed. They were murdered and chopped up and their fucking organs were removed for use by witch doctors. Mm-hmm. And hear this out. Because people thought that bald people were rich. I would think you would just like know the person. And then if maybe they're not all just rich.
Figure out if they're rich. Yeah.
Right. It's just super easy to test. Like it's the easiest claim
absolutely.
To test ever.
Absolutely.
But they also thought that bald people's heads is the best part of the story. I can't see. Okay. Scroll down. I'm going to read it because I can't. I don't even want to paraphrase it.
You bet.
So this is from the Newsweek article. This is amazing. Think about what has to happen in your mind to believe this
okay,
is true.
All right, sure.
Some people in Mozambique, and I love the way this is written by Newsweek, mistakenly believed
you want me to read this?
That the heads of bald people contain gold.
Me gold! You get that guy who's like, he cuts it off and he's like, oh, someone scooped in the head out. Or just a brain in there.
I love it. They had to be like, some people in Mozambique, they're like the writer of Newsweek, some people in Mozambique believe, mistakenly believe.
I have to have that qualifier on there. So Newsweek doesn't get sued. Right, That's why.
Because somebody's like, oh,
because there's some guy in Alabama's like, there's head in them.
There's gold in them our heads.
There's gold in that bald head over there. All right.
Like,
I got to get me pan and stuff out.
You know, I don't want to fall
trap
into
pan.
The trap pan. Tunk, 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 tunk.
Ain't no gold in there. Maybe if I sift these brains here through this strainer.
This turn upside down.
Shake with the strainer. I don't want to generalize about a people, but all of the people that think this are fucking stupid.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're not just a little stupid either. They're fucking literally criminally stupid. The idea that they'd be like, no hair, probably their head's full of gold. Let's kill them.
I don't know how you get from one to the other.
What do you think is in a human head?
I don't. Like,
that you think that somebody could walk around and do stuff that has a head full of gold.
So we want to thank our patrons. Of course, we want to thank all our patrons for their generous donations. We want to thank our new patrons. Simon, Vizubon, this one's my favorite, The Bjorn Identity, Jessica, Ivra Ensemble, Justin, Natalie, Frode, Dale, Matt, Ashley, John, and Christine. Thanks so much for your generous donations. We really do truly appreciate it. Thank you so much. You keep Glory Hole Studios going. So we got a message from Patty Cake Rex, who was talking about the Paris Agreement and talking about how there's some states and that are actually going to pledge to do the Paris Agreement. It looks like Hawaii is the first to
sign on.
Yeah. And Patty Cake Rex, like we talked about in the first 100 days episode, I feel like this is sort of echoing what we said, which is, you know, this work has got to be done no matter what.
Sure.
Right. No matter what climate work to try to get renewable sources of energy, to try to slow the the warming of the planet, to try to, you know, get energy saving stuff, to try to make sure that, you know, all of these things come into place. It's going to have to take private hands now because the public sphere is out of it. Sure. So private individuals are going to have to step up and do the work of this. I saw that the president of France put out a thing on TV or on the internet the other day. I don't know if you saw this. Basically said, anybody who's working on this stuff, no matter where you're at, you can come here. We want you here. So what's so funny is, you know, like this idea that the free market's going to spur innovation.
Yeah. It might spur it right the hell out of here.
It'll spur it out of here. You know, we're not going to be a leader. We won't be a leader in this anymore. Right. Yeah.
We could, exactly. If we are now.
That's exactly it, right? A brain drain based on this. And he was like, come here. You're welcome here. You're welcome to do that work here. So, you know, again,
let's incentivize our best and brightest to leave.
Yeah.
Right. That's how you make America great again.
Yeah. But Patty Kick Rick says you should call your representatives whenever you can, write your senators, email your governors and mayors. Hopefully, I know that our city, the Chicago has pledged to follow this Paris Agreement as well. I think a lot of places around the country are going to do this. I heard Pittsburgh was outraged that they were the example that Trump used. He said he's not the president of Paris. He's the president with Pittsburgh is the city that he cares about. And Pittsburgh came out and said, look, we've had clean initiatives for decades.
For decades.
We've been one of the cleanest cities because of, you know, reforms and things that we put in place decades ago.
I love it. He picks like a city that's like, no, we're the exact opposite, right?
Yeah,
exactly. You didn't even do the fucking research to pick us. Yeah.
So,
should have picked Houston.
Yeah.
Houston hasn't done clean anything ever. Like, Houston just has factories that produce smog. Like, they just burn.
They don't even do anything.
They just burn. Like, yeah.
Those are the dead bodies they put in.
They just randomly burn things for no reason other than to pollute.
So we got a message, and I want to play this message before I talk about the tweets that we got. Mm-hmm. But I want to play this message first. This is from Martin.
Hey, guys. This is Martin from Charlotte. But you know, I've been a doctoral student for more than 4 years now, working on my dissertation for 3. And I can tell you that just learning about the specific thing that you're studying, the area is usually so laser focused on something very specific that you spend years and years just reading about this one thing among millions and millions of things that are out there to study, topics. And for Boghossian, and I forget the other author, to write a hoax type of paper to kind of poo-poo this gender studies idea is really baffling to me. And I can't believe that someone who supposedly, you know, understands the scientific method would do that. It just boggles the mind.
So very interesting that we got that message from someone who's a PhD candidate. We got a couple tweets that I want to read. These tweets came in this last week, right after the show. And I hate responding to people on Twitter. I genuinely loathe going back and forth. I hate the back and forth of having to confine what I want to say, especially on a subject this broad.
Yeah.
I don't want to confine myself to 140 characters. Right. It's ludicrous. I'm never going to do it. So if you tweet at us, chances are what I'm going to do is I'm just going to bring it onto the show and talk about it. So someone tweeted at us. The question is, if only PhDs understand their area of study, how do the rest of us evaluate any truth claims? Apologists use the same argument about the Bible and the Quran. If you are not a scholar, you cannot fully understand. And lastly, if we need a PhD to understand these things, why does Thomas and Eli have to have Eli explain gender studies to us? I want to address that one first.
Okay. Yep.
And that is, he doesn't.
Right.
He never does. That literally never happened. You clearly didn't listen closely enough to that podcast. He did not explain gender studies to us.
Didn't explain one concept.
He never once even tried to explain a concept of gender studies. He may have explained some of the things that came out of gender studies in the sense that these were social revolutions that happened because people studied gender, but that's not the same thing as explaining gender studies to us, which I do not remember happening. I would be happy to listen to any time codes though that you would send of Thomas's podcast. So I won't poo-poo the notion, but I listened to it pretty carefully and I don't remember it.
Yeah, I'll just flat out say, I don't think that happened. Yeah. I listened to those episodes just like you did. I listened to those episodes pretty carefully. I thought they were interesting episodes. Eli did not go on with the intent to explain gender studies.
Yeah.
He is not an expert in gender studies, nor does I think he pretend to be an expert in gender studies. And Thomas doesn't either. they did have discussions about the hoax paper.
Yeah. And then he also talked about some abstracts.
Right.
And some of the, and we're going to get into the abstracts here in a second. So we're going to take that part of the question differently. Okay. So the question is, if only PhDs, Tom, understand their area of study, how do the rest of us evaluate their truth claims?
Yeah.
And so you had an idea about this.
Yeah. I don't think that the rest of us get to understand those truth claims as lay people without changing our status from lay people to expert. Right. So it is unreasonable in 2017 to presume that I can pick up an abstract from any field of study that is not my area of expertise, or pick up a paper from a field of study that's not my area of expertise, for which people have spent 8, 10, 12 years of their lives building a highly specialized body of knowledge and vocabulary surrounding that body of knowledge. And I, as a layperson, having done none of this, can pick that up and just read it and decide whether or not I think it's accurate. Yeah. That's, I think, the height of arrogance. And I think it completely invalidates the reality of how knowledge works in the 21st century.
Why do they need a PhD then?
Sure.
Why are you paying someone this kind of money if everybody can just pick this stuff up and I can just pick up any very deep, thick, you know, really complicated philosophy paper by somebody who's a PhD level and just get it?
Sure.
Yeah. Why even pay to get a PhD if anybody can get it? You know, we're not all the guy from Good Will Hunting.
Right. Most of us aren't, right?
And most of us. We're most not. People none of us are. Not.
Yeah. Yeah. One, right. That's there was a fictional
all guy. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, the
and
same.
He wasn't real.
The same as like, yeah, just because you can read doesn't mean you can read Ulysses by Joyce,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Like, okay, yeah, you can read. You might be able to pass your eyes over the words and maybe you even know what most of those words are. But does that mean that you are equipped to read that novel in a meaningful way? No,
we tried to read, Tom and I, we thought we'd read some of the best books ever. Mm-hmm. And I remember we started with a list that was like 25 best books. And number 25, we're going to work our way down to one. We got through one book and it was 25 on the list and it was Sound and Fury. Is that what that was called?
Yeah, Sound and Fury. Yeah.
And Tom and I read that book and we thought it was the most backwards gibbledygarg book that we'd ever read.
Gibberish. The whole first half is
And what happened was, is, you know, if you read Critical Theory, that book, it's a brilliant book. You just need to have someone help you with it. Like, I mean, I was not equipped to pick that book up and just understand it. When I read it, I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah. And I was not equipped either. And I have a degree in English literature.
Yeah.
Right. And you have a degree in continental philosophy.
Yeah.
We are not equipped to read that book, right? Because it's over our head.
Yeah.
It is the case sometimes that things are just over your head. That's why you continue to get education in a field of study. You know, so I did take the liberty of just poking around and finding a handful of abstracts.
Okay.
And I want to read these as to make my point, right? Yeah. So this is an abstract picked literally at random from a physics journal, right? So here's the first couple of sentences for the abstract. Tell me if, as a lay person, this seems reasonable that you should be able to read this paper, right?
Do I have to be honest?
Yes.
Okay.
And this was seriously picked at random. I didn't go try to find a hard one, right? WMAP precision data enable accurate testing of cosmological models. We find that the emerging standard model of cosmology, a flat adominated universe seeded by nearly scale invariant adiabatic Gaussian fluctuations, fits the WMAP data.
What?
For the WMAP data only, the best fit parameters are H equals 0.72 plus or minus 0.05 omega sine with a little zero.
What?
H squared equals 0.024 plus or minus 0.01 omega sine
you
with the M.
You
can't even read it. I can't read it. The thing is, like, I would look at this and say, I don't know what this means at all.
I don't
know what the WMAP means. I don't know what, I don't have the vocabulary. I don't have the math.
You would have to,
right?
If you wanted to understand this paper,
right?
You would have to translate it, right? Yes. You would have to spend some portion of your life looking up each section of this to try to contend with it. You might find something that you don't understand as well. So like if I looked up the equation weirdness that they have in there and be like, well, I don't get that. what can I get? Can I work my way down to understanding something? And once I understand one thing, maybe I can work my way back up. You would have to spend a lot of time trying to teach yourself some things to try to figure that out. And I don't know that I ever could teach myself how right. to do this.
And the thing is, like, okay, let's say I was, let's say I did all of that, then I'm no longer a layperson.
Yeah.
Right? I have taught myself. I have developed a body of knowledge,
yeah.
which has moved me from layperson
yeah.
to a person with a specific area of expertise, right? Yeah. But then I'm still not any closer to evaluating whether it's true.
Yeah.
I've only gotten to the point of understanding what it meant.
Yeah.
I've not yet even begun to build a larger body of knowledge to compare that against, right?
And what their argument is that these things are too complex, right? So what we did was we looked for some gender studies ones, mm-hmm. and I found four or five that I read through, and I was like, I kind of get that. Like, I kind of right. understand it. Like, I get,
right.
yeah, I get where this particular gender studies one is coming from.
So I understood wanted to find
them,
one that was hard.
I understood them enough right. where I read them, and I was like, oh, I kind of get that. We found one where we're like, oh, this one seems very challenging. So right. the name of this paper is Transitional Subjects, Gender, Race, and the Politics of Temporality.
Right. So let me read a couple of sentences from this. I argue not only that the role of temporality must be theorized in these debates, but also that these issues must be considered within a historical context in which temporality is deployed as a mechanism of power. I ask how transgender experience requires a rethinking of foundational continental queer feminist frameworks, such as self-creation, disciplinary normalization, the sex-gender distinction, and the intersection of gender and race. I show that paying attention to transgender experience highlights the central role of temporality in the nation-state's racialized maintenance of the category of gender. Throughout, I contend that the conversation between continental feminist philosophy and transgender studies allows for a more thoroughly historicized intersectional account of the relationship between bodies, time, and power. The amount that, so here's my takeaway from that. I don't understand that.
I don't get it either. I don't know what it means.
I know all of those words.
Sure.
And I look at that and I think, okay, I would have to be familiar with a body of knowledge that is so deep that it is just as specific as that physics abstract that sure. we read, right? I would have to pour time and energy and effort into building a depth and foundation of knowledge that I can come to this paper and contend with it, like as you say, contend with it in a meaningful way,
yeah.
right? And so, again, I think it's entirely hubristic to look at something and say, well, you know, I'm a pretty smart guy and I should just be able to pick it up without a specialized body of knowledge and understand it. We don't expect that of physics. We don't expect that of biology. We don't expect that of almost any other area of expertise or study.
You have to spend that much time on.
Yeah. And you know, you wouldn't expect to be able to say, oh, look, you know, I occasionally read for pleasure. I read James Patterson novels, so I'll pick up Ulysses. You'll be fucking lost.
Yeah. We got a message. This message is from Varden. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but Varden is in Germany. And recently there was a couple of exchange people who came that are Christians. And Varden was wondering how to talk to them. And then he realized, you know, I could probably do some street epistemology like Anthony Magnabosco. And Anthony Magnabosco was a guest on our show recently. Really just a very smart, sharp guy who does street epistemology.
Yep.
And this is a great way to do it. If you would have sent us this message without your own answer in it, Varden,
this is the answer
yeah. I would have given you. So good luck. And, you know, send us a message and let us know how it goes. He's going to talk to these people and just ask them how they know. And right. I think that's such a great way to open up the conversation. We got a bunch of messages about the story we did last week about the 11-year-old girl. A bunch of people said it's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. It is not wrong.
It's old. Yeah.
And so, that's one of the things that we would like to say is a lot of people said it's on Snopes. Well, just because it's on Snopes doesn't mean it's all false. We checked it out on Snopes and they said, yeah, a couple decades ago, someone did marry an 11-year-old, and they were 20. And so that was a thing that happened. Now, there was a couple, there was a mixture on there. So there was a couple false claims, but they were
the image that was used in the article was not a true image.
And we didn't talk about right. that.
And they didn't make it clear in the editorial that we were discussing that this was an instance that had happened
several years ago.
Many years ago. In the past. But the facts of the case do not seem to be in dispute.
And it happened, right? So it happened.
Right. You can't have a system that both says a person under this age is unable to consent to sex and yet is able to get married because the parents consent for them?
Yeah. Yeah, no.
How could I consent for somebody?
And I don't know that that changes what we were talking about.
It doesn't. That's,
what
I'm saying,
it doesn't change what we were talking about. So, so
fundamentally, all those things hold true.
We still were talking about it. So yeah, it was an old article. We will absolutely admit that. But again, it wasn't technically an article. It was a new article in the New York Times. It's just an old thing that happened. Mm-hmm. But Mike had a great point. He said that the senator in Florida that was arguing that the 13-year-old girl's opinion didn't matter when it came to changing the marriage age in Florida basically said a 13-year-old isn't mature enough to inform our decision on this, but is mature enough to get married by at least 2 years.
God. Good point.
It is a great point. We got a message from Aaron, and there's a sign outside. One of those, what do they call those? The signs with the marquee signs.
Yeah. With the changeable letters.
The changeable letters. And someone had put this on a sign.
When I find myself in tweets of trouble, Mother Russia comes to me speaking words of wisdom, Kavafe.
So we want to thank Thomas from Holy Kool-Aid for stopping by.
Absolutely.
A lot of fun to talk to
him. Great guest.
We're going to have a link to all of his social media and to his YouTube page on this week's show notes. So check it out. If you haven't checked it out yet, check out Citation Needed. We're going to be covering in the next week, we're going to be covering J. Edgar Hoover. And then in the following weeks, we'll be doing Stanford Prison Experiment. And then we'll also be covering the Jenner. Illustrious career of John Harvey Oswald.
No, John Kellogg. Harvey Kellogg, you Kellogg. Son of a bitch.
Did he kill? Is he an assassin? Because he had three
God
names.
God damn it.
He had three names, so he had to kill somebody.
That's
right?
Not true.
John Wilkes Booth, Lee Harvey Oswald, John Harvey Kellogg.
John Harvey Kellogg probably did.
John kill Harvey Kellogg killed William Henry Harrison.
I'll tell you what, he killed fucking a lot of boners. That's what he killed.
If you're interested in that, it's going to be it's a total not safe for work one.
No,
too.
That's not
it. It's a lot of fun. So check him out. Citation Needed, citationpod.com. You can find us on iTunes and all the other places. It's a lot of fun to do that work with two of our other best friends in Eli. So that's going to wrap it up for this week. We're going to leave you like we always do with Skeptic's Creed.
Credulity is not a virtue. It's fortune cookie cutter, mommy issue, hypno-Babylon bullshit. Couched in scientician, double bubble, toil and trouble, pseudo quasi alternative, acupunctuating, pressurized, stereogram, pyramidal, free energy healing, water downward spiral, brain dead pan, sales pitch, late night info docutainment. Leo Pisces, cancer cures, detox, reflex, foot massage, death and towers, tarot cards, psychic healing, crystal balls, Bigfoot, Yeti, aliens, churches, mosques, and synagogues, temples, dragons, giant worms, Atlantis, dolphins, truthers, birthers, witches, wizards, vaccine nuts, shaman healers, evangelists, conspiracy, doublespeak, stigmata, nonsense. Expose your sides. Thrust your hands, bloody, evidential, conclusive. Doubt even this.
The opinions and information provided on this podcast are intended for entertainment purposes only. All opinions are solely that of Glory Hole Studios, LLC. Cognitive Dissonance makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, currentness, suitability, or validity of any information, and will not be liable for any errors, damages, or butthurt arising from consumption. All information is provided on an as-is basis. No refunds. Produced in association with the local Dairy Council and viewers like you.